live across Victoria
on ABC Listen,
your smart speaker,
and on your radio.
This is 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Hello, and tell me this morning what you think of this process, the current process for the introduction of data centres. Another data centre, yes, could be coming, this time to Miners Rest. That's a suburb of Ballarat. And it's only come to light, for most of us, when the developer made an announcement just yesterday to the Stock Exchange that this was their intention. Now, the local council in Ballarat has confirmed with us there's been no planning application, let alone approval, because the recent changes as well to our planning system here in the state have expanded the state government's role in planning it. How is that all working out? If you live or live near Miners Rest or in Miners Rest, or even if you don't, wherever you are in Victoria, what do you think of the process? We know that data centres, we're told, they're necessary for the things we do every day. We know the jobs are so valuable. The investment is valuable. The state government has said it wants to be ruthless about getting the jobs here. This morning I'm going to be talking to the local Labor MP who's not happy with the process that she's seen with this one in Miners Rest, a suburb of Ballarat. So tell me what you think of it. What is the process? Are you happy with it? Let me know. All this, as well as the federal government announces a new approach to AI today in a landmark speech at noon. Now, we're going to dig into that, about how that's playing out in politics. I can already see that the coalition is trying to make some political hay about that, but how far apart are our political parties when it comes to AI? Because politics in all these things are important, aren't they? Or are they for you? Are they for your kids? Tell me, what got you interested in politics? I want to hear from you today. What got you? What topic? What cause, potentially? What politicians in your life got you interested in politics? The reason why I'm asking is because a major study has revealed that the young people in our lives, the 19 to 24-year-olds, the young adults, they're very sceptical about politics. Their trust in politics is down. Their understanding is very low. But most of them are engaging in politics in their own very modern way, through online petitions, through joining social media campaign groups. Only a third of them, or is it as much as a third of them, what do you think, have attended a protest or a demonstration in the past 5 years? Tell me how you got into politics. Maybe how you're engaging your kids in politics. What do you think about engaging in politics through social media campaigns? I'd love to know your thoughts. 1300 222 774 is the number to call, or 0437 774 774 into the conversation hour on 774 ABC Melbourne and Victoria. So tell me, how did you get interested in politics? What slogan, what topic, what time of your life got you interested in politics? But coming up next, what is happening with the process around data centres in Victoria?
This is The Conversation Hour with Mary Guerin.
So we've heard that an Aussie technology firm, X2M, has signed a partnership with a property developer, Resi Ventures, and they've announced, to the stock exchange at least, that they want to build precincts across regional Australia. They're starting with Miners Rest. Someone who has called attention to this is Martha Haylett, who is the Labor MP for Ripon, and she joins me now. Thanks for joining me, Martha.
Thanks for having me, Mary.
So before we get into it, let's describe, as much as we know, I'm going to quote from WinTV, Bendigo, I believe, covered this last night, talking about it. We've tried to get Resi Ventures, the developer, on the line, and we may still get them, but we're still trying for them. But in the meantime, Richard Simpson, who's the head of commercial in Resi Ventures, did talk to WinTV, talking about how they were going to seek planning permission for this first data centre.
We use data centres every day. You look at your phone, you look at the internet, anything like that uses a data centre of some description. So it's really important for regional Victoria.
That wasn't actually Richard Simpson. We'll try and get the quote from Richard Simpson. That was one of the developers talking about the importance of data centres, of course. Martha Haylett is the member for Ripon. You know about the importance of these data centres. What do you think has been wrong with this process?
We've been completely blindsided, Mary. So they put this on the stock exchange 2 days ago. No one had heard about it. Me as a local member hadn't heard about it. The City of Ballarat as council hadn't, and the community hadn't. So they chucked it on the ASX and the community knows nothing about it. So we're all playing catch up. We've all been blindsided. And really, a project of this scale deserves a lot of scrutiny, transparency and engagement, and we haven't had any of that from this project.
Yes, we've heard from the City of Ballarat ourselves that it hasn't received a planning application for that precinct. So they might announce it to the stock exchange, but they still have to jump over all the hurdles, don't they?
They do, yeah, and they haven't even put in a planning permit at all. So they will have to go through planning approvals with the local council, and there is steps that they would have to take. But putting it up on the ASX and basically almost saying that it's a goer and it's a done deal is pretty disingenuous, and the community feel that they haven't been brought a part of that conversation in any way. They really deserve a say in the project, especially a project of this scale, and they haven't had any of that. There's been absolutely no engagement.
I'm talking with Martha Haylett, who's the Labor member for Ripon, and we are talking about the proposal for a data centre in Miners Rest near Ballarat. What do you think of this process? 1300 222 774. Of course, there'll be listeners, Martha, who say, well, this is your government, and we know that the latest changes to the planning system that have been, of course, to attract data centres to this state have expanded the state government's role in planning and the decision-making there. So this has happened on your government's watch.
Well, the developers have put this proposal to ASX. They haven't consulted the planning minister, absolutely no government agency. So all of them were scrambling yesterday. You know, this had come out of nowhere for them as well. So it will have to go through a planning process. And I'm really glad to see that the federal government is going to announce an Office of AI in the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet today, and that there will actually be some Australian standards for AI, because we are playing catch up on this and these things are happening very quickly, but we have to ensure that the communities that they are potentially going to be built in are actually brought along for the ride. They can't just throw these on our communities without any conversation and any discussion of the impacts of it. You know, this has a big impact on water and energy use and amenity and the future character of our community, and that needs to be up for conversation with the community.
That speech is going to come at 12 o'clock. We're going to talk a bit later to see whether, as you say, whether the standards will include those planning standards as well as something yet TBC. But, Martha, you're talking there about everyone scrambling because the developer was able to do this yesterday. Do you believe there should be a legislation in place that would prevent them from doing that before they've gone to the community?
We definitely need to look at the legislative framework around all of this, and there needs to be better standards, and I'm glad to see those Australian standards are coming on board, but we need to have a look at this as a Victorian government as well, because it cuts across so many departments. You know, it's unclear exactly who leads. The planning side of it is obviously the Minister for Planning, but we need to have a much more coordinated approach about these projects.
What sort of, if in your ideal world, if, for instance, community consultation, and you would no doubt say substantial community consultation happened, what would be the green light then for the developer? How would that work? Is it a matter of a vote, or what would that look like?
Well, there needs to be, I mean, any consultation with the community. They need to be asked about, do they want this? Do they want something else for that site? They need to be brought along for the ride, and none of that has happened. So, the Committee for Miners Rest, the local residents, when I put this up on Facebook yesterday, because I only found out about it yesterday, everyone just completely felt blindsided. No one knew about it. So we're all still trying to digest it. And I think that those conversations will come in the coming days and weeks. But that we need to be a part of it as the community. The fact that government agencies didn't even know about it, let alone the community, is not good for Resi Ventures and developers like this.
So is your problem with it that they weren't told and they can't assess it, or is it to the point where you will be telling your government that you don't want it to go ahead? Is that too far? Is that jumping three steps ahead?
Well, I will definitely be having conversations with the planning minister and other relevant ministers about this. But we need time to be able to properly scrutinise it. We need to have answers to questions for the community, and we need that engagement. So I will be raising this with ministers in my government. But the community needs to also be given answers to the questions that they will ultimately have.
Someone on text is saying, look, this is just a company trying to list on the stock exchange in order to reduce financial risk if approvals are knocked back or delayed. Is this, you know, it's just something that we'd have to cope with if we're going to have investors in the state, that they're just going to have to be putting that out there to the stock exchange and then explaining to the community?
Well, we need to actually have a proper process around this, Mary. And you know, AI is the future, and data centres are needed, but we need to make sure that they're actually going to be built in the right places, that that there is benefit to the community in those areas that they are in, and that it is actually something that the community want. We can't just have developers throwing a project on people and just expecting them to suck it up.
Is it part of the problem that the Premier and the government has, you know, used quite, forceful language about this? I think the Premier is saying that she wants to be ruthless to get those jobs into Victoria, obviously in competition with other states, you know, really trying to get this investment. Does it send mixed signals then to investors?
Well, this is where we need to have a real sit-down conversation about this with the communities and as a government, because you know, there are positives to AI, like jobs, but that can't be at the expense of communities, and that is where we need to really properly have a conversation and a coordinated approach about it.
And I guess on that, this company has said that they want to develop it across the regions. Do you believe that will potentially have those, that there is a place for data centres across the regions? This one in particular, I believe through the reporting, is only two stories high, 100 metres long. Is it about impact to the regions? What's the most important thing for you in figuring out that balance between it being around and inevitable and something we can live with?
Well, I think that federal and state governments need to be a part of that conversation rather than the developers themselves just deciding we're going to chuck it here. It needs to be that approach where we determine actually where is correct to put these, and then where those are, you know, that needs to be really scrutinised about the impacts to the area, the benefits back to the community. An area like Miners Rest, it's a growing area of families, you know, workers, healthcare workers, people who are really passionate and care deeply about their community, and to have a data centre just on their doorstep, there's a lot of concern around it, and rightly so.
And just really briefly, before I let you go, Martha, do you believe that the Premier would back you on all of this?
I haven't had the direct conversation with her because I've just found out about this yesterday, but I will absolutely speak to her about it, and I know that many other MPs with proposed data centres will be having those conversations with her.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Mary. Have a good day.
You too. That's Martha Haylett, who's member for Ripon. What do you think? What are your views? 1300 222 774. Joining me now is Michael Buxton, who's Emeritus Professor of Environment and Planning at RMIT, to give us a bit of a snapshot of how this fits into the planning process. Michael, thanks for joining us. What is the process to get a data centre over the line? Is what this developer has done pretty much par for the course?
It is, Mary. What's happening with data centres and a lot of other major planning applications in this state is that developers are taking advantage of a new separate track planning system that the government has brought in called the Development Facilitation Program.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have to wait and see what this application is going to mean and what avenue a developer will use, but normally an application is made to a council. It's advertised. People have a right to comment. And there's a proper process to consider it under the planning system. The development facilitation program overrides all that, and it can actually supplant the planning system, and the developer can go straight to the minister. Now, some of these data companies have made it clear that that's what they're going to do, and some of them have already been approved under this system. So, you know, in effect, we've got a separate planning system now, without the normal transparency, without the rights, without the proper processes and evaluation, where a developer just works direct to the government. And there's a hell of a lot we don't know that goes on about all this from beginning to end.
But we've just heard there from Martha Haylett, who's the local Labor MP as well. We do know that other MPs are representing comments and criticisms from their people. Do you think that that's an adequate safeguard in light of giving more power, planning power to a state government that obviously wants to have the jobs and investment but needs to tackle local views as well?
No, it's not. It's really good to see a local member taking notice of this, but the Labor Party certainly needs local members to get involved in this kind of process, because the minister has just been making all these decisions. It's an incredibly autocratic process, and the community is shut out, local government shut out, and the local members really haven't been involving themselves to the extent that they should. I wish Martha was the planning minister. We might get a bit more of an evaluation and an assessment of a program like this.
And Michael Buxton, we're talking today about how people are getting involved with politics. Very soon we'll be talking about how young people are doing it as well. But do you think that data centres is going to be potentially a key for grassroots political involvement, especially in the regions?
I think it is. They're already going in now, and when they go in places like Footscray, they've been going into industrially zoned land, but they're causing lots of impact. So what's being missed in all this is, as you've been saying, Mary, there's a lot of discussion about energy use and water use and so on, but one of the really big issues and the fundamental issue in all this is the locational issues, and you're absolutely right to point to these. And all the discussion by government and by many of the environmental interests have ignored the locational issues. And so even the industrially zoned land is often very close to residential land. It's causing noise and other problems. And what's happening now is that the big data companies,
are calling you. Michael, I feel like technology is getting in our way, which is
Mary. The big data companies are buying up cheaper land, and they're seeing that in the green wedges and in the rural in rural zoned areas. It's a lot cheaper to buy land in those areas.
Which makes getting the details of all of that planning all the more important. Michael, I'm going to have to let you go, but thank you so much for giving us a bit more of an overview. We will continue on this topic, so no doubt we'll be getting you back. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Michael Buxton is Emeritus Professor of Environment and Planning at RMIT. What do you think? 1300 222 774. John in Ivanhoe, what did you want to say?
I wanted to say that the overwhelming issue for me is the energy requirement and the water requirements of these huge data centres.
Just to interrupt you, I'm so sorry, John, but just as a counterpoint to this, I just want to ask you, this one is, according to the reporting, we don't know this for certain, I think, that it's only 100 metres long, couple of stories tall. Is it? I know that you'll probably be pointing me towards the cumulative effect, but is that potentially part of the equation?
what the size of it. 100 metres long and, yes, well, because it will have to be cooled, won't it?
Yeah, you're talking massively about the environmental effect.
Yeah.
Yes, John, thank you. So many texts as well worried about that issue. I'd love to hear from you about this. Keep those calls coming about the data centres. Also, I want to hear about how you were interested in politics, potentially which politician, which slogan, which time. Malcolm in Brunswick East, tell me, how did you get involved with politics?
Yes, well, look, I was, I'm sorry, I'm trying to get you off speaker. If you can hear me okay, I'll
yes, I can.
Oh, good. I got into politics through the Vietnam War because back in 1965, I was at university studying to be a teacher, and I got together with a whole lot of other young, long-haired, radical mouths, and we all discussed the morality of this Vietnam War.
Yeah, and your interest in politics continued from there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what staggered me was here am I thinking I was inventing politics for myself, and then the prospect of being called up for the Vietnam War reared its head, because when I went back home to my parents, they had a letter talking about the call-up, and it turned out that my father had been demonstrating already against the Vietnam War, and this came as a huge shock to me.
He was one of the protesters. Malcolm, thank you for telling us your story. I'd love to hear other stories as well of what got you interested in politics, what time of your life. Maybe it'll be AI for this next generation. It certainly is in the spotlight today. We've got a landmark speech on artificial intelligence from the PM coming up at noon. All we know so far is that an office of AI is going to be constructed. How will that work to guide us through all of this? Claire Armstrong is ABC's Chief Digital Political Correspondent and will tell us. Hi, Claire. How are you?
Hey.
What do we know about this? The Centralised Office of AI, it sounds a bit 1984-ish. It's great to centralise standards. We've already heard that being referred to today by a local MP who's upset about the process for data centres. How will it operate, though? Because AI intersects with every other portfolio.
Yeah, well, Mary, that's kind of, I think, the Prime Minister's thinking here. This Office of AI will sit within his department, so it's not going to be some big burdensome bureaucracy that takes a long time to get going. I think that was quite critical in the government's thinking. And as you say, there is, and as we've heard from some of the callers, there's obviously a lot of anxiety around a lot of the resource requirements for data centres, be that the land, the use of energy to power them, in different models where water is used to cool them. All of that planning and approvals, a lot of that environmental law sits at a state level. And what we've seen is ad hoc different jurisdictions, some fast-tracking, some not. And essentially what the Office of AI will be first tasked with doing is coming up with these standards, things like requirements of bringing in energy, of environmental implications, potentially local procurement as well to ensure that there's investment that stays local. All of that will be kind of centrally coordinated at that federal level so that it can be dealt with at, say, national cabinet when all of the premiers come to talk to the prime minister about these kinds of national issues.
And that's always thorny when you have the federal government talking about state powers, of course. We've been talking, Claire, about a local community that didn't know about a proposed data centre in the light of the Victorian government's expansion of its own say in these planning areas. Is there a suggestion, is there a whisper in Canberra that, in fact, the federal government will be telling the Victorian or New South Wales or whichever government how they should be assessing these?
I don't think there's a prime minister in Australia's history that would dare tell a state government exactly what they can and can't do in their own jurisdiction. I think the point is, at the moment, that there are obviously consistent concerns about how these data centres are being constructed, and the government at a federal level is essentially stepping in to assist and support the states in having same standards. I mean, that doesn't get into the broader community debate where I understand a lot of people are just worried about these things existing in and of themselves, but it will at least bring some kind of continuity, I think, and ensure that that investment is actually, you know, being handled appropriately.
Mm. Claire Armstrong will be across the landmark speech from Anthony Albanese that's coming up after the Conversation Hour. But Claire, also I read that it's expected this speech to be calling on tech giants to earn their social license. Of course, there are political points in taking on the tech bros. Is there, even as the parties try and score political points from each other here, is there much daylight between the major parties in their attitude to big tech, how much they're willing to smack big tech around while still wanting their investment, and particularly when it comes to One Nation as well now?
Yeah, look, I think some of the more populist wings of Australian politics have definitely been quick to detect that there is a lot of community grievance here around how data centres are rolling out. The government obviously is taking a pretty middle-of-the-line approach. They've ruled out big overarching regulation, but are clearly now going to step up now with some frameworks. We haven't heard from the coalition, but I expect that that will probably broadly be in line with where they sit as well. They're aware of the social licence issue. We've had One Nation, the Greens, others being far more critical of the potential, you know, impacts of data centres as a piece of infrastructure in communities. I expect we'll get a bit more pushback from them. I think, though, broadly what's important, I know data centres are very tangible and easy to get your head around in a way compared to some of the other issues of AI. But the issues of AI expand far beyond the location of these physical warehouses. We're talking about the impact on employment, on people who create things, books, music, that want to protect their copyright. And what the government is really trying to do is draw a line in the sand and say there's going to be a standardized approach where whatever the issue is, whether it's the use of AI in discovering the next, you know, big health breakthrough, whatever it is applied to, there's some oversight in a way that's centralised. And I think that most of the political parties will broadly probably get on board with that conceptually, if not, you know, in the implementation.
Claire, I know a lot of Conversation Hour listeners are passionate about the intellectual property argument. So, yes, we will no doubt be looking into the entrails of all the speech to see what comes of that. Thanks so much for giving us an insight, Claire.
Thanks for having me, Mary.
That's Claire Armstrong, who is ABC's Chief Digital Political Correspondent. And, yes, it's going to be a big office with major powers talking about some of the most fundamental issues we're looking at. Maybe that's what's going to get our kids interested in politics. 1300 222 774, what got you into politics? Also, we are talking about those data centres. Colleen, you're in Miner's Rest, ground zero, as it were, if for this particular one. What do you think?
Well, it's really funny because we knew nothing about it until, actually, my husband knew something about it last night, and he said to me in bed this morning, oh, about the data centre. I said, oh, don't be ridiculous. And I had to look it up online.
Right.
To say that, yes, that we're actually getting a data centre. We do not have the infrastructure to handle a data centre. We are we might be just outside of Ballarat, but we're just really sort of very much rural as well. And it's just family environment. We do not have massive work environments like that, or do we have the area to be doing it, to be perfectly honest?
Colleen, I'm not entirely sure of the exact location. I think it has been part of the reporting. It seems to be a disused sort of part of town. The as I've been mentioning, the dimensions seem to be 100 metres long, two stories high. I guess the argument would be that the developer is going to come with their investment and their money to make that infrastructure.
But do they, though? That's a reality. I mean, they say they're going to do infrastructure, and time again, you actually don't see it. It's like building a new suburb, you know. Oh, the infrastructure's going to come, but the infrastructure doesn't come, and you have gridlock and all that sort of business. So
Colleen, will you get involved and fight against it?
I think I might actually, because, like, you know, I mean, I've got grandchildren out there as well, and it's like our roads are busy enough as it is because it's a area that has developed with a lot of houses, but that's predominantly what it is, just housing.
Yeah.
You know.
Colleen, thank you. It's so valuable to get views from locals there. If you are also a local, tell me what you think. 1300 222 774. We'll try and keep those calls and texts coming throughout the hour. My producer, Marnie, has just reminded me that is, in fact, the former basalt quarry at Miners Rest is where the proposal is for. Sharon, you're in Corio. What do you think?
Yes, I've done quite a bit of research about it online. In America, you know, people are really active at trying to stop these centres because they use huge amounts of water and power. And these companies are so big that in America they're actually buying up some of the electricity companies so they can hold, you know, keep their prices down. But in Corio, in Geelong, there's two being approved to go ahead, and they're in future housing areas. And there's a lot of employment to build the places, but what people don't realise is there's actually a minimum amount of staff required to run those centres.
Mm.
So there's not a, it's just a short term.
So you don't think there's the jobs there to be chasing anyway?
Just to build them, but then the electricity, and yeah, especially Geelong, we're low on water, they're going to take huge amounts of water. And they don't recycle, or they can't, and evaporates through evaporative coolers.
Well, and to be fair, Sharon, we haven't heard everything about this. We have been trying to get onto the developer to join us on the Conversation Hour today, and unfortunately we haven't been able to secure them. But yes, obviously a concern that's echoed on the text line as well, I can see here. Thank you, Sharon. We will continue that conversation. Also coming up this hour, if you're like me, planning a trip to the other side of the globe for myself or a loved one, and you don't know what to think about transiting through the Middle East, which so many Australians do, we thought we'd touch on how you can plan again when you've got this on and off again war that's affecting the Middle East. That will be coming up in the Conversation Hour. But next, tell me, what got you interested in politics? What topic? What politicians? What time? Next, let's talk about how young Australians are engaging in politics in 2026. And we are on the Conversation Hour. 774 is what you are listening to. Now, there has been a fantastic longitudinal study of Australian children. They have been looking at 10,000 children who were born between 19 and 24 years ago and followed them through and just picked out bits and bobs of what this generation, Generation Z it's called, are thinking about. And the latest little nugget that we have is that only 11% of this cohort believes that the political system gives them a meaningful say. They think politics is too complicated to understand, but they engage in their own modern way with social media campaigns, with online petitions. Tell me what you think about that way of engaging with politics. 1300 222 774. Is that fair? That's the new modern way for this younger generation. If you're in that age group, tell me, is that the way that you feel empowered these days? Is that the only way to get through to politicians potentially? 1300 222 774. And I'm asking you how you got involved in politics. What were the slogans or the politicians that inspired you? Head of this longitudinal study of Australian children is Kirsten Campbell, and she joins me now. Hi, Kirsten.
Hi, Mary. Thanks for having me.
This is fascinating to me. I love the longitudinal study in any case because I love feeling like we can grow up. These kids are growing up with us and we've got an insight into their minds. When it comes to civic engagement, this is the first time you've looked at it, isn't it? Did it surprise you what you found?
I think absolutely this was something that was really key for us to talk to these young people about as they entered adulthood, and it has been fascinating to see what we've found. And I think what we've got is a report that really challenges the notion that young people are not engaged in social issues or civic life, but it does show tell the story of a conversation that's not quite connecting.
What do you mean by that?
I think we're seeing, as you've mentioned, that the way that young adults participate in civic life is really evolving, and that mirrors how they live, work and connect online. So I think there's a real question about whether politics and public institutions are meeting them on those channels and really making the best use of them to talk to young people where they're at and build trust that they will be listened to and heard.
1300 222 774, if you are a young adult or near enough to being a young adult, does this resonate with you, and do you believe that governments should be reaching into the online space in order to hear you? And also, I want to hear from you, what was it that got you engaged with politics, and is that the thing that you are trying to engage your child with politics? Maybe it's about AI. Maybe that will get them involved. 1300 222 774 is the number to give me a call. Kirsten Campbell is with us, who's been looking into this. So as we've said, we've seen that 80% of a certain number of this cohort had signed an online petition, and we've got 60% following a social media group campaigning. Is this engagement, did you get any data about the quality of that engagement, whether they felt like it was effective, or was it more just about the means that they're choosing and that's what they are attracted to?
Yes, I think if we look at the data side on side that we've just discussed, there is obviously a high level of engagement using those digital channels, but a real low level of trust in that voice being heard, and also a healthy scepticism about social media. So there's definitely a nuanced story here about young people reaching for engagement channels, but then perhaps not functioning as well as they would like. I would also highlight there's a lot of collective and on the ground action that we found. So people getting together with those who are like-minded and trying to make a practical difference on the ground rather than necessarily going through political processes.
Mm. We're talking about how young people, how you have been interested in politics. 1300 222 774. Jill, you've called in from East Malvern and you're having conversations across the generations about politics. Is that right?
Yes, I am, Mary. I mean, I'm in my 70s, so I grew up through the Vietnam War, Gough Whitlam, all of that sort of stuff. So I was always been involved. My daughter follows that through to a degree, but my granddaughter, who's 17 and is aware of the fact that she's soon going to be voting, is incredibly interested in what's going on. And I pick her and her girlfriends up on a number of occasions, and we have amazing conversations about particularly the orange-faced man and, you know, the orange-haired woman. They're really onto it. But what they are concerned about is that a lot of their peers aren't, and the school never really addresses the importance of them as young voters.
Oh, that's really interesting.
And she said, you know, she knows that some of them wouldn't even know what the requirements were for voting or to register or any of those sorts of things. And so
her
immediate cohort are really interested and not watching television, by the way. They're right. It's all through social media and talking.
Right.
And especially talking to an ageing grandma who's totally switched on to all of this stuff.
Jill, you sound like the best grandma. You do. You're plugged in and you're talking to them. That's terrific.
I don't know about being the best, but they think I am, so that's the most important thing.
Oh, yeah, that absolutely is the most important thing. Good on you, Jill. Tell me if you are talking to the generations in your family about politics. 1300 222 774. With me is Kirsten Campbell from the Longitudinal Study of Australian Children. Apart from that very disturbing insight into the lack of civic education there, Kirsten, that anecdote from Jill talking about being involved in politics, it's interesting that it came through the US politics kind of lens. Does that indicate that that's what's happening on social media and that's how they're being engaged?
I think if we look at our results, what we do see is that the economic global outlook is really high, top of mind for young people. So I'm not surprised to hear that sort of focus on broader global politics as something that's a real entry path. I think Jill's also reinforced some of the more striking findings from our report, which we did hear up to 40% of young people said politics was too complicated to understand and participate in. And of those who didn't vote, 47% didn't vote because they weren't registered and weren't sure how data register. So she's really hit on a thread that we're finding here around people being engaged and interested, but not really able or sure how to participate.
Yeah, well, and as I say, that is a whole other conversation about our education. You're with 774 ABC Melbourne and Victoria. We're talking about politics. Tell me how you got gripped by politics. Was it a slogan? Was it a cause? What was it? Was it a time in your life? Kirsten, what also jumped out to me is that while most of this cohort is talking about online engagement, 31% had attended a protest or a demonstration within the past 5 years. Do we have any idea about how that compares with other generations? I know that might be outside the remit of your study, but is that high, low?
We don't have comparison to the other generations, but we do through the Australian Bureau of Statistics General Social Survey have comparisons to the broader population. And it is about on par with what we would expect more broadly. So again, it's really challenging, this myth that young people are less engaged and telling a story of a different and evolving way of engaging in civic life across the board.
Mm. And so what are you taking from this, potentially, apart from teaching people how to vote? What do you think the government should be taking from this in a policy sense?
I think this report really highlights the opportunity for government to demystify the political process, engage people on the channels where they're at, and build that trust and transparency about how their advice and views are used to shape policy. So if we're looking at future social cohesion, that trust is a critical element of getting people to participate and shape the future. And to do that, you really have to have a conversation where people are talking.
Kirsten, thank you for telling us about the study.
It's my delight. Thanks for having us.
Kirsten Campbell is longitudinal head of the Longitudinal Study of Australian Children. We're talking about politics. We are talking about what engaged you in politics. Noel in Beechworth, what grabbed you? Hello, Noel.
Hello.
Hello. How did you get involved in politics?
It was basically Vietnam War. Originally, going to teachers' college, I was pretty much dismissal of it, or didn't really take it into account, and it was a bit strange, a bit of a coincidence. I had applied to get into teachers' college, and I was living in Melbourne, and my parents were in Geelong, and the same day that I got notification to go to a medical to go to Vietnam. The same day in Geelong, my parents got a notification that I got into Teach College. It was a lot later. It was sort of delayed. It was past the start of the thing, but I must have been, sort of one of the last intakes for the college, Teachers College. So that's what changed me. I went to Teachers College and I got a political education and,
sliding doors, Noel. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Thank you so much for calling. Prabha in Colac, what did you want to say?
I think that the reason why the young go to social media and internet to be politically active is because within our political structure, there is no role for the people besides voting. I think
no role? Not in civic engagement in other ways, in going, talking to your council or writing to your member? That doesn't cut it for you?
No, I have actually gone to the council.
No, I just mean
questions.
In terms of having a role.
There is not a decision making role.
Right, got you.
It is purely you come and complain, and they don't. But if you're lucky, they do listen to you. But I think the essay that I wrote, which I wrote it for the Age, but hope, I don't know whether they'll publish it, is my view is that the politicians have got too much power in relation to deciding the rules in relation to how they are elected, govern, and are held accountable.
To have too much power. Yeah. Prabha, I think I might have just lost you. Pardon me. But yes, that's looking at power a whole different way. This on text, I'm pretty sure my 20-year-old and 19-year-old were automatically enrolled to vote without needing to do anything. Can you clarify if that's correct? I don't believe that's correct. And I But I think it's pretty simple. If you go to the Electoral Commission, either of the state or the Australian one, and yes, maybe it does come down to just even knowing how to get involved, how to vote, how to register to vote. Yes, I would recommend the AEC is good for that one as well. We're also talking about data centres. Miners Rest may have one. It's being proposed. David, you're in Miners Rest. What do you think?
Oh, g'day, Mary. Yeah, I'm the president of the Committee for Miners Rest. And thanks for, having us on. I suppose
the Committee for Miners Rest. What is that?
So we're a not-for-profit incorporated association, essentially like a progress society for the township. Mm-hmm. So we're made up of a membership that just really advocates for good stuff to happen in the town, because it's a beautiful town here in Miners Rest.
And the data centre?
Well, look, there's a couple of things. I just wanted to bring some sense to some of this discussion. So the site is a former quarry. Mm-hmm. It was remediated from that use over the last few years. The zoning on it, to my knowledge, hasn't changed. And it was a basalt quarry for a reason, because it's solid bloody rock. So
yes. Not to interrupt you, but to support what you're saying there, David, we have received a statement from Resi Ventures, the developer, who says that they're seeking planning approval. That's the first thing. Mm-hmm. On an old quarry site that can't be farmed, it goes on to say the precinct is projected to create around 250 direct permanent jobs and going to help Victoria and Australia reach our climate and renewable energy targets faster and help stabilise the grid. You sound like, David, you are in agreement with the developer there.
No. What I'm saying, Mary, is that when I look at it, Resi Ventures is a private company that traditionally build residential housing estates. They've now joined up with this mob called X2M, who have released the listing information on the ASX last night. Mm-hmm. Saying that they're going to go and build this marvellous thing in Miners Rest. I think it's more market speculation than anything. Why would a property developer move from building a residential estate to moving into this sort of stuff? It's because they can't build what they're led to, and they can't find any other way, I would assume, to get rid of the land. And the thing that I worry about...
So you're saying that they have the land and they're looking... They do say that it's part of a bigger plan to get data centres across regional Australia.
And it certainly could be. And the cynic in me, though, says that, it's just trying to offload some land. But more importantly, I think the thing, and on behalf of Miners Rest, is there's a lot of things that this town has that are beautiful and wonderful, but there's also a real sense of lacking some of just the fundamental facilities that we need. And we, as a committee, are always advocating for that with government. These sorts of things put Miners Rest on the map, and people are now paying attention to us, but for all the wrong reasons, because, again, this is just a speculative move by a couple of companies. What about the 3,800 people that actually live here every day that need the fundamentals done for them? So while everyone's talking about this bigger picture stuff, I completely agree. We need to consider these things as far as the data centres go. But there's already places in Ballarat where you could build a data centre quite easily, down in the Techno Hub near University of Ballarat. So a lot of this talk is nonsense.
Mm. So it sounds the Committee for Miners Rest will be engaging with the politics of this as well.
Oh, look, I don't think we'll necessarily be engaged with the politics. What we'll be saying is, everyone has a right to have their view.
With the planning politics, I guess.
Yeah. Absolutely. But the simple thing is that this isn't the biggest thing happening in Miners Rest now, and it doesn't appear to me to be a genuine course they're actually pursuing. It's more just to get, I suppose, some commentary in the media, and they've done pretty well at getting that.
Yeah. Thank you so much for calling, David. Really appreciate your perspective as well, and to get a bit of a wider idea of the other issues at play in Miners Rest. Rosemary, you're in Edith Vale, and you wanted to talk about data centres. Is it up your way, Rosemary?
No, it's not up my way, but I coordinate the Green Ledgers Coalition. And what I was going to talk to you about is there's another one at Diggers, there's a meeting at Diggers Rest about another one that's nearby at Plumpton, also in the north of the city. They seem to be all in the north and west, the applications. And so I just wanted to alert you to this other one, which is in the Green Wedge. It sounds as though the Miners Rest application is in a quarry and it's not on farmland. But the one at Diggers Rest or Plumpton is on farmland, and it is in the Green Wedge, or that's where it's being proposed. It's similar. It's just there's just talk about it now. There's companies talking about doing it. But fairly certainly, I mean, I think the miners' rest one, just to clarify, I think you were told by the company this morning that they will be making an application.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more than just talk. It's a clear intention to have an application.
Oh, absolutely. But it was more about it being announced as a viable project before the application was put in. So, Rosemary, yep. You'd like to see that process changed as well?
Well, yes. I mean, furthermore, the government in 2018, the government pledged to improve the protection of green wedge and agricultural land. And since then, they've done a lot of consultation, but they haven't actually made any changes. And one of the things they pledged in an action plan they released in 2024, released by the planning minister, was to prohibit data centres in the green wedges.
Mm.
Now, they're having second thoughts about this.
Yeah, well, we know that the Victorian government has made very clear that it wants the investment, and it has changed some of those planning laws to take over parts of that planning process. As we heard earlier, a bit of a parallel situation with the councils there. Thank you, Rosemary. And we've been talking about politics and how people have been involved, potentially through data centres. Steve in Doncaster, how were you gripped by politics and engagement in politics?
Yes, look, I think that you can't expect young people to get involved in politics if you never talk to them about it.
Mm.
And I was actually visited at my school. Now, I have to say this is 50 years ago now. I was visited at school by representatives of a party, and I was impressed by what they spoke about. So I joined up. I didn't join up actually at that moment. It was a couple of months later.
Mm.
But I've been a member of that party now for 50 years. I even stood for Parliament for them when I was 26, which was deep in the last millennium.
School. You have to start them young.
I just absolutely think it starts at school, and at the very least, I think 17, 18-year-olds need to be taught how to register and why they should register and how they can engage with their local parties. It's a big missing gap, I think, in our education.
Steve, I've always had the argument that if you don't vote, if you don't participate in the process, then you have no right to complain. How's that?
Absolutely. Don't. If you don't vote, just shut up and cop it sweet.
Steve, thank you so much. It's been a ripper conversation in the Conversation Hour today. Thank you so much. Very soon, though, you'll have Afternoons with Bridget Duclos. How are you?
I'm very, very well. Hi, Mary. I'm very well. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thank you.
We're going to continue the e-bike conversation for this morning. City of Yarra have had enough. They're getting rid of them. They are bloody nuisance. I have them outside my house all the time. But on the other hand, I love them and I think they're fabulous. So we want to know about how you feel about them.
Have you hopped on one? I haven't.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah,
by City of Yarra stopping it, though, it stops the flow. It means you won't be able to continue on.
Oh, yeah.
So it's going to be an interesting move. I'd like to see them do them, but do them better. Also, do you remember Arnold Dix? Do you remember that name? He was the fabulous man who went to the Himalayas and helped rescue the 41 guys trapped in the underground tunnel.
Yes.
Anyway, they're making a film about it, and he wants to play himself, which made me think, who would I have playing me in a movie? Who would you have, Mary Gearan?
Oh, someone totally glamorous.
Gorgeous.
You know? Gorgeous.
Gorgeous. Who would you have?
Sandra Bullock.
Oh,
what do you
nice.
Reckon? Yeah, I'm going
well,
top,
I went
shelf.
For Charlize Theron, which I think might be going a bit far.
No,
but
I love it.
I once put her on as my Facebook picture, just hoping people wouldn't notice. So we want to know if you were in a movie, who would play you? Let us know after 12:30, plus the Joy of Music and Shannon Lush and Staines.
Oh, and Staines. Oh, get
you
on.
You must
the,
have a Staines.
Yeah, 1300-222-774. I know the phone lines fill up for
I've
her.
I've never
so
seen more people have stain issues than at 2 o'clock on a Wednesday.
That is Bridget Duclos on your afternoons. Now, we've been talking about politics and how to get engaged in politics. Angus has joined us from St Kilda East. And Angus, I believe you are a young person engaged in politics?
Why, yes. How do you do?
How old are you, Angus?
I'm 23.
23. And how did you get hooked?
Well, it's kind of just always been around for me, whether it was on the radio or on social media.
So you listen to the radio, Angus?
Well, why don't you think I pulled in?
Yeah, exactly.
But what I remember from probably my youngest, like, political stuff was the school strike for climate change, which I participated in about 2019. So I was a bit younger back then. But that came from social media.
So that is the way in. Angus, I'd love to talk with you more about this, but we are running out of time. That is the problem with radio. Maybe we can get Angus's number. We can ask him more about it. Thank you so much for joining me, and join me again tomorrow on The Conversation Hour.